Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
In this AudioCast 28, we're going to talk about Germans, Nazism, European Union, racism, immigration, and Buddhism. Why not? So sit back and...
One, two, three, listen.
If you're willing to talk, Father Leo is willing to listen. Get ready for a deliciously deep discussion of Shoot the Shiitake with Father Leo.
And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo, for another deliciously deep discussion and a conversation with Sebastian Springop, who is from Germany, and he's totally German. You're going to hear that in this week's deep dish discussion. He's also part of my institute, my spiritual religious institute called Voluntas Dei, which means the will of God. And he's very different from me in my experiences, not just because he is German, but also because he is coming from an experience that is not my own. You know, I kind of have struggles with the European Union because I travel there all the time. And I love, first of all, that I don't have to get my passport checked at every border. But at the same time, I wonder if sometimes some of the more wealthy countries take over the identity of the other not so popular countries. And while I certainly love the idea of a united Europe, sometimes I just wonder if they're just trying to replicate something that is even possible, you know, because every country within Europe, they're so different from language to currency to culture and yeah, even food. And so I don't know if I'm the biggest supporter of the European Union, but in this deep discussion, I'm going to sit back and just listen to the experience of someone who is in Europe. And by the way, he's Catholic, but he also practices Zen spirituality, Buddhism. And you're going to think, what the heck kind of institute are you in, priest? Well, I'm in a pretty Roman Catholic one. And you're going to hear how all of these different opinions from something that I might have or from you as an audience might have, well, it doesn't have to be something we fight about, but something we can learn about from each other and even learn more about ourselves. So get ready for a deliciously deep discussion with Sebastian Springop, and I'll be back in just a moment. This episode is brought to you by Select International Travel, and you can find out more about their passion for pilgrimages and their compassion for the pilgrims. And I've got 4 trips lined up next year, going to amazing places like southern Italy, Malta, and Sicily, and then another trip to Croatia and a spiritual conference in Medjugorje. I'm also going to be going on another Danube River cruise and also the Holy Land with Steve Angrisano as the musician and co-host for an amazing trip to Jordan and to Jerusalem and beyond. So you can learn more about all of my trips and also to support the work that I do and bringing people out of the pews and into this amazing world by just going to selectinternationaltours.com or calling 800-842-4842 or visit me at the website fatherleofeeds.com/travel. We're back with Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, and it's a pleasure to have you, Sebastian Springop, join. Did I say your name correctly?
That's very good. Thank you.
That's very good. Now, Sebastian, let's first learn a little bit about your country, Germany. Obviously, we are kind of in the middle of the country in a way, right?
It is, the Middle West.
The Middle West.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of rolling fields out here. Mm-hmm. This is, we're in the city of Attendorn, which is comprised of about 12 villages. And I guess in the United States would be considered like a county. And here in this county, but this is your city, there's about 27,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty small.
It is a small town, that's right.
What's the largest city in Germany?
This is Berlin.
Berlin, and how many?
The capital.
Yeah, and how many people would be in Berlin?
There would be, I think, over 3 million people.
Okay,
so living there.
It is a very big city.
It is. Yeah, but it's far away from here.
And we are very far away from here. And we are sitting in your beautiful home. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you that you are here.
It's really a pleasure, and this is so German, folks. We just finished a traditional German breakfast with some beautiful breads, some cured meat, some smoked meat, and then, of course, you've got some beautiful coffee here. And the only thing missing is beer.
Beer is more for the evening.
More for the evening.
Maybe you can ask for beer in the morning in Bavaria, but
let's
not here.
Start with beer, because your country, Germany, is known in America for
beer.
Beer, but particularly Oktoberfest. What's your experience of Oktoberfest?
I've never been part of the Oktoberfest, never been there, no, because Munich and Bavaria, it's far away from here.
Okay.
So it's not my party. It's the party of the Bavarian people.
Which is very interesting, because in America, everybody thinks that Germany all over the place is all about beer and Oktoberfest. Have you ever heard of the Oktoberfest in the United States?
Yeah, I know. And I have some friends in Pittsburgh in the German club. And they celebrated every year the Oktoberfest very intentionally.
And it's not like you do it here in Germany.
No.
There are a lot of what I would call misconceptions or misrepresentations in the American experience of Germany. I'll be very honest with you. I've been to Germany about 4 or 5 times, and it's a pleasure to be here a little bit more. You know, folks, I've always had a desire to go into the country, into a little village, or as you would say, village, right?
Yep,
a little village, and just see what their life is like. And you, Sebastian, has given me that opportunity, and it's very different. So let me share with you some things and just give me your responses to it all.
Mm-hmm.
You people here in this village are very welcoming and very nice.
They are. They may be, I think, when they are meeting someone or somebody who is not from here.
Yes.
Maybe they keep a little bit distance, but polite as well.
They're very polite.
But they are very faithful. And if you have a friend, found a friend here, he will be your friend forever.
So there is really a sense of local community here in the smaller towns, in the smaller cities.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true for all of Germany, or do you find the same thing? Big city, less relationships?
Of course. Bigger cities, not so much. Yeah, local kit.
And I was, when I first came here, I have to be honest, I was a young seminarian.
Mm-hmm.
I was always intimidated because Germans are just so tall
and
they're so white.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so, like, how shall I say, stoic.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really sense their emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Like now.
Like now. Yeah, you're right. Maybe they have a view on the world a little bit more distantly, more down to earth.
More down to earth?
I don't know.
Yeah, but it's interesting because what I've seen here, there are some impressions that I have that are fitting perfectly, like the organization and the cleanliness.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you get this from?
I don't know. Maybe it's in the genes. I don't know.
It's very interesting. And you've traveled around the country, around the world. So you also know that the German way of doing things is not the same as everyone else's.
No, I think this... Maybe if you can say that, it's a special character of the German people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much a character that there is organization. In fact, when I went to theology in Europe, I studied in Italy, a lot of the technical terms were German. But here's an interesting one. For breakfast, folks, Sebastian was very kind to give me some delicious traditional foods. And one of them is something that would be akin to some yogurt with a little cream cheese with a hint of sour cream. And it's all mixed together and makes for a beautiful, delicious spread. There are 22 letters How do you even pronounce this?
I should read the word?
Yes, please do, because I'll mess it up.
This is a very delicious Speisequark-Zubereitung.
Speisequark-Zubereitung.
Oh, not bad.
Not bad at all, mm-hmm. But yogurt. 22 letters for yogurt. So it's funny to me to see, you know, when they have English translations and such, the precision of it all. Now, when it comes to your experience of being a young German man, tell me about your sense of what it means to be German to you.
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. For me, it has always something to do with the history, of course.
Yeah.
So German history, especially 70 years ago, with the time between 1933 and 1945.
Sure.
I think every generation after that time has a responsibility to create peace and to keep that souvenir alive. Evil or how bad the human race can be to other people.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Yeah. And obviously you're talking about war, you're talking about the Second World War and the fight between the Nazi forces and the Allies, basically.
And even worse, the Holocaust.
Of course. Yeah. Certainly. We're sitting at your dining room table in your very beautiful German home.
Thank you.
And it's everything, folks, is pristine and clean. I'm a little embarrassed because I just dropped a piece of jam, a little drop of jam on the on this beautiful tablecloth, and I was horrified. Even worse, I broke two glasses. I was trying to wash them.
Yeah. So the visit was a real disaster.
It was a real disaster, obviously. Now, your sense of becoming your sense of a modern German man now, and your relationship to Germany, and how do you see yourself in relationship to the rest of the European Union?
I'm feeling like a European habitant, of course, because I think this project, European Union, is a very important project.
Yes.
To create peace and create a community where war and conflicts are no longer the big thing.
Yeah, but I mean, do you think it's possible with so many different cultures and even languages? And
it's always a challenge. You can see that every day in the politics, but yeah. I think it's the only way.
Oh, I think that you're right. The only way that you're going to have peace is if people are willing to work together.
Right.
But do you think that one of the fears is that one country might kind of usurp or take over because of their economic strength, or they don't want to depend on another country, or they don't want other countries to depend on them?
From time to time, I have the impression that some states of the European Union are more have the idea that it is a financial and economic thing.
Yes.
But it's much more than that. It's an idea. It's a vision.
Sure.
Of bringing people together. And that's very important for the future, to keep that idea alive.
Obviously, it's an idea that's rooted in just faith in general and any God-believing person to be able to have a sense of peace with each other. Now, obviously, peace is going to come when people are, you know, see their equal dignity. And that also includes finance. So let's talk about just German finances from your experience. The capital for the Germans kind of financial district would be Frankfurt, right? The city
of Frankfurt. Right, this is in Frankfurt.
And you follow the euro, which is what many of the European unions follow. Mm. And what would be an average income? Like, do you have middle class here, upper class and lower class?
Of course.
Yeah. And so what would, say, a middle class salary be, just in the general area?
I have no idea. It's a good... I don't know.
So people really don't know each other's...
I don't know, because I'm not so... It's not my interest.
It's not your interest?
No, not at all. So ask the internet. I don't know.
Yeah.
People will find it in the internet.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So where you live right now in the city of Attendorn, it's a pretty wealthy...
It is a very wealthy town because of the industry here is very, very strong.
Yeah.
And so it's a wealthy town.
And you have, like, to live here... say comfortably, how much would, say, a one or two bedroom apartment be about?
You're asking me questions.
yes, that's what we do.
a two room apartment, a monthly rent could be about 500 euro.
500 euro, yeah, which would be about 700 American dollars. That's pretty good.
I don't know.
Yeah. And then as far as like living here, to go to, say, cinema or movies, mm-hmm. how much would a movie be? Because in America, we have different prices.
A movie, it's about 10 euro, I think.
Okay, so that's yeah. about the same. Mm-hmm. That's about the same. And a lot of people love to compare, you know, mm-hmm. this country to that country, this culture to that culture. What would you say would be some of the bigger differences between Americans' culture and German culture? Because you've been to America several times, so you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, it is a history, of course.
Sure.
Being part of this very old history of Germany and Europe. I don't know how to say. Maybe the German people are a little bit more reflective.
Reflective?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe sometimes more serious.
Yes.
Directly.
Oh, definitely on the direct side. I think when we visited two kind of competing cities, Dusseldorf and Cologne.
Right.
And they are very reflective on one very important thing.
The beer, of course.
The beer, that's right. So if I'm in Dusseldorf, mm-hmm. I have to order the Altbier.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm in Cologne, I have to order the...
Kölsch.
And if I were to order one at the other, what would happen?
If the things are going bad, you will be kicked out of the restaurant.
Really?
Really.
Just really kicked. And the people who serve the beer, what are they called again?
This is a Kürbis.
A Kürbis?
Mm-hmm.
And tell us a little bit about them, because this was an exact, almost mm-hmm. maybe perception, even prejudice. I will admit that. Mm-hmm. We all have some, mm-hmm. right? A prejudice that I had of what the German people would be like, but they yeah. kind of fit in part the bill.
Yeah, the Kürbis is a very old institution
yes.
in Düsseldorf and in Cologne. The waiters, they are wearing special clothes
uh-huh.
and they have to be mean to the people. And they celebrate it to be mean to the people.
They have to be mean to the
yeah.
people
yeah.
and they celebrate it.
They celebrate it, yes. Oh, mean means not so polite as you would think about it.
Like as a professional
as
server.
As a professional server, yeah.
Professional servers are kind of known, mm-hmm. at least for the most part, because mm-hmm. I've been to many restaurants with mm-hmm. you and they've all been very pleasant,
yeah.
very kind.
For example, my aunt, they went into one of these brewery houses in Cologne,
yeah.
and she ordered a coffee. And then the answer of the Kürbis was, if you would like a coffee, three corners, there's a cafe, we are here in a brewery house. So,
and they didn't even like break a smile.
No.
No, they very rarely smile. And that's something that they celebrate. And again, that's part of, in a way,
mm-hmm.
the tradition of just very mm-hmm. stoic people.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's stoicism, and I guess we can get a little philosophical here, because that can turn into even a mentality, like of a people. Mm-hmm. And that mentality, what would you say was the rise or the start of the Nazi party, you know, if we're like to look at the history.
Mm.
I'm just trying to figure out where did that all come from? Because it happens in other countries too.
That happens in other countries. It has had to do with the political circumstances after the First World War.
Yes.
And yeah, maybe some special situation came together. And of course, it's the mentality of the people
uh-huh.
that they are...
And it was a national pride, right?
Yeah, focused on a leader or something. Ask all the scientists that the historian, I don't know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They will give you the answers.
Yeah, there's certainly a cultic personality
yeah.
that
Maybe.
Drew people into
yeah.
it all. Yeah, we will never mm. ever know. But now, so many decades later,
mm.
what do the modern German experience? Think of that in the past. I was reading in the newspaper about how there was a monument
yeah,
to help people to remember
I think
this.
This is really a very good thing and should be an example for every other nations who have experienced things like that, to feel or to work on the responsibility,
mm-hmm.
to work on that what happened.
Yeah.
And to find out how did it become a reality. Why did that happen?
The city of Attendorn, where we are right mm. now, it was bombed by the American forces, right?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the table that we're sitting at right now has a little bit of an heirloom to the war. Can you explain that to our listeners?
So this is the old table of my grandmother.
Yes.
And it used to be in the house where my grandmother lived. It's just in the center of Attendorn. And during that night where the bomb attack was, they tried to rescue their furniture. And so they all put it in the church to be safe. During that way, about 10, 15, 20 meters, I don't know.
Yeah.
The flames, the fire came down and put some scars on it.
Yes, basically there's some burn marks on
burn
this
marks,
table
yeah.
from the fire that from was fire. Coming from the bombs.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Wow, and so this table is pretty significant when it comes to, how shall I say, understanding Germans' past.
Mm-hmm.
Now, being obviously, again, a modern German man and looking at the past, what would you say would be kind of like a lesson that you take from all of that, you personally, and that you would kind of share? Because you're a teacher. We're going to talk about your profession and your faith and your personal background. But I just want to get a sense of Germany from you. What do you wish to communicate?
I think for me and for all the people is not to forget what happened in that past and to be prepared. If there will be some, maybe there will be somewhere, sometimes, these kind of thinking will be alive again. It is.
In that kind of thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just say what it is. It was a type of genocide against a
genocide,
group of people.
Racism. Racism in general.
What is racism to you? I mean, like in America, we struggle with race relation issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if some person of a particular color cuts me off and I scream something at them, not a racial slang, you know, like, get out of here. They could actually say to me that I'm being racist.
Mm-hmm.
It's clearly, I mean, I'm a man of a different color.
Mm-hmm.
So what would racism be in your mind? What would be a definition of it for you?
Being scared or afraid of people that are not like me.
Yeah. So it's really based out of a fear of somebody's difference for you.
Yeah. A fear of a difference. Yeah.
And I would say that that fear leads to a hate. That you just don't want to get together with them.
Right.
What kind of proactive things do you do to fight against those things?
I'm giving the example that differences in color, in kind of thinking, in thoughts, in religion, I don't know what, doesn't matter.
Well, coming here to Germany,
as Martin Luther King say, every one is equal.
Yeah, well,
that's the point.
Sure. Well, at least equal in dignity, you know, I mean, because you're a tall white German man and I'm not.
Yeah.
So there's obviously going to be differences. And me coming here, if there's one thing that surprised me the most, you know, I don't always see a lot of emotion from the German people, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Filipinos are super expressive. Americans are kind of expressive.
They are. Mm-hmm.
But coming here, one thing that surprised me was that you guys have almost like a week where you just lose it all and you celebrate to no end. Folks, did you know that Germany has some of the longest lasting traditions of Mardi Gras, also known as Carnival?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Especially in that region here, in the Catholic regions, we are celebrating the Carnival very intensely.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and when we say intense, that is a very intentional word. It is intense.
It is.
Everyone gets dressed up.
Of course.
A week off of school.
Week off school.
And you're preparing for literally the entire year almost for this.
Yeah, the preparations starts in October. And we.
And what do you do at this carnival? Come on. I mean, like in America, the Mardi Gras is very different than you do it here in this town.
There are the parades, there are shows, they have their own songs, and everybody knows the songs, and they are singing and have parties all over.
That's the unique part. It just seems to me like there is, when carnival happens, at least in the Catholic parts, and we're going to talk about Catholic and Protestantism, obviously, there's a a thing with Luther and Catholics, mm-hmm. and I'd love to hear your perspective of it. But when you all get together, everything is kind of pushed to the side, mm-hmm. and at this carnival, everyone is singing the same song. Mm-hmm. There's a real sense of nationalism. Folks, in America, we don't really have a national song other than, mm-hmm. you know, the Star Spangled Banner. Mm-hmm. I was racking mm-hmm. my brain, mm-hmm. and Sebastian was playing me mm-hmm. all of these songs. I was trying to think, do we have something like this? Mm-hmm. These people are all singing these songs. Mm-hmm. It's quite amazing. Mm-hmm.
And that brings the people of all nations, of all religions, of all, it doesn't matter where they are coming from, that brings the people together.
Well, but if you don't speak the language, you can't really sing the songs, obviously. So I don't know.
But you can try it.
And I can try
you are just
Sebastian. I can't even pronounce yogurt.
But you remember the black man who was playing the carnival songs in Cologne?
Oh yeah, we were in Cologne, mm-hmm. and there was a musician, mm-hmm. and he was basically a singer and musician. Mm-hmm. He was singing a song, and he had a bad accent. You mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't matter. All the people were singing with him.
They were. And yeah. it's funny because it's almost like, this is not a negative word. It was a time for them to be silly. Mm-hmm. A time for them to just yeah. play and mm-hmm. celebrate who they are from their own history. Mm-hmm.
But you have to be careful. It's a very deep thing.
It's very, very deep.
Yeah.
So even if people would, because this is a time also where mm-hmm. you kind of go against some, you know, there's some satire with politicians mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. the present day stories. Would people be sensitive if they kind of said something and it would be offensive for people?
I don't think so. Then,
so yeah. everybody can come, no matter what ages.
That's very tolerant. Yeah.
It is just super tolerant. Like in America, mm-hmm. our carnival, mm-hmm. there's at least the impression that it's only for adults who get drunk.
Okay. Yeah. You will find that in Germany as well, of course.
Sure.
But the idea is something different. And I know many people who are feeling that idea of the carnival.
Sure.
Not just take the chance to get drunk.
But there's a real, you said it, a reflectiveness.
Mm-hmm.
A real reflectiveness. And so that just enters very deeply into the people. And when we come back, we're going to get, I don't want to say deeper, but I definitely want to know, mm-hmm. because you are a unique man in many regards. We're going to hear a little bit about your personal story, your faith experiences, because it's certainly unique to a lot of Americans and maybe even some Christians and Catholics. I would love to hear about that. And then also to hear just about what it means to be German in the year, you know, in this modern era. In a global world, and how do you relate to other people? We'll get more of that when we return with Shoot the Shiitake. This week, for our premium subscribers, I'm going to offer my reflections on all that has been happening in our world, from the Vigano account and Pope Francis's silence to a little bit about the Kavanaugh hearings and the Ford testimonies against him. And so if you are interested in getting this information, please subscribe and make sure that you become a premium subscriber by donating $10 or more each month, because we firmly believe at Shoot the Shiitake that if we have more conversations, it can lead to conversion. So thank you for your support, and you can do that at fatherleofeeds.com/listen or go to the new microsite, shootthesheetaki.com. That's Shoot the Shiitake, that's two I's in shiitake.com. Welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with Father Leo. We are now in the major metropolitan city of Frankfurt. It is the business capital. We took about less than a two-hour ride from the city of Attendorn, where when I came into it, it felt like I was coming into like a Hobbit Shire. Very beautiful, very pastoral. And now we are not anywhere near there. We are on the city located near the river Main. And Main is a big major river, and it kind of feeds into the Rhine River, where the people of Cologne, Germany, find a lot of, how shall I say, passion. They're passionate about it. They're connected to the city as well as to the river. It just means a lifeblood for them, like many European cities. And so now we're actually sitting in a cafe right outside in a piazza. They wouldn't call it piazza, but maybe like a, what would be like a similar to a piazza, Sebastian?
Platz.
a Platz. It's a plaza. And we're right outside of St. Paul's, which was formerly a church. And now it is a historic place because that's where the country of Germany was formed, in a way, as a national organization.
The first assembly, the first constitution in Germany is founded here.
Yeah, so we're talking about a very historical place in a very financially powerful place, and we're welcoming back Sebastian. We had a very nice talk on the way up here. We were talking everything from the economy, which you really don't care too much about.
No.
But you do care about the euro.
But I'm well informed, but I'm not a passionate economist.
Yes, but you also are very passionate about what the financial situation in the European Union can do to bring about a sense of, I don't want to say nationalism, because that's what you want to almost fight against about, but a sense of community amongst the European Union. Would you say that's true?
I'm not quite sure if how much the euro is the symbol of the European Union, but the European is much more. It is an idea.
Yep.
After the Second World War, the people, they said to each other, it's important that something like that never happened again.
And you're talking about the Holocaust, you're talking about...
the Second World War in general, where the European countries fought it against each other. And so this European Union is an idea to create peace between the countries. And it's not only an economical thing. It's a big idea. It's a vision of peace.
It's a vision of peace. And now we are in the city of Frankfurt. And just so that you know, I did have a Frankfurter, which is basically a really long skinny hot dog with nice mustard, I must say that. And thank God they have French fries here as well. But it's very good. Very good. Now, about you, you are a little bit different in general. A nice man, and I'm glad to know you. We, just for full disclosure, Sebastian Springup is... I met him several years ago in my community of consecrated life. He has made many invitations to come to Germany, to me, and to everybody in the community. But sad to say, I was the one who showed up.
Yes, actually the second one.
The second one.
Yeah.
So now I'm just basically...
But the first American.
But the first American to show up. So I took him up for this invitation, and what I'm learning about him is really quite amazing. He's Catholic, coming from a very Catholic part of Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the relationship between Protestantism and Catholicism now. What is there a relationship at all?
There's a relationship, and the big ecumenical work, the big churches, Catholic Church and Protestant, they're working very well together.
Yep.
So there isn't that kind of problem and rivalry. What's that?
Oh, the word? Revolution or the revolt?
No, there's not no combat.
Oh, there's no. Okay, from the Reformation.
No fight.
There's no fighting between Catholics and Protestants now.
Not at all.
But obviously with Zwingli and he was Switzerland though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Zwingli was Swiss. He was kind of a reformer for Presbyterianism as well as Martin Luther, German.
Mm-hmm.
And now that is kind of settled into place.
Of course, yeah.
And
both churches are accepted and both churches, they work very well together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep, they work well together. And theologically, there's a lot more similarities now, but there are still some major differences. You now work as a counselor, particularly in grief counseling.
Grief counseling, right.
At a school called St. Ursula's. Tell me about your work and what you do and what do you love about it?
Well, I'm a teacher for 10 years now for the subjects German literature and grammar and religious education. And my out-of-teaching job is being a part of the counseling team in the school, and especially for the students or parents or other teachers, they experience someone passed away or something.
Yeah, but you also are very involved in your local community as kind of like involved in the carnival.
Yeah, the local life.
We only talked a little bit about carnival because a lot of people only really know about the Bavarian, which is the southern part of Germany, the Oktoberfest. But there's much more to that, right? In the other Catholic parts, you've got Carnival, which is like Mardi Gras.
Right.
And you were actually one of the elected kings. Prince.
Yeah, this is the most important person.
So you were the most important person for how long?
For some days.
Really?
Yeah, for these days.
And you get elected. How do you get elected to that position?
The committee, they elected me to have me as a prince.
And you have to apply for it?
I have to apply for it.
And what are some of the criteria for all of that?
Being involved in the local history, know to present yourself.
Yep.
And being not boring or something like that, I don't know.
So you've got to have a level of entertainment. And on top of all of that, you are as I'm coming to get to know you more, you take your spirituality very seriously, but you've got a very eclectic spirituality, if I can say eclectic. That means kind of a wide range.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your spirituality, because it does... Some of it have its roots in your German history, of course.
Of course.
So tell me about that, because I think there'll be a lot of people interested in how you approach God.
The first basics is the spirituality of the Voluntas Dei Institute, of course.
Okay.
And in that spirituality, you have a part of meditation, and so you have to. I looked after a long time what is the right thing for me. It is not the rosary for me. It is, I found the meditation of the Zen.
Zen?
Yeah.
Japanese, Buddhist, Zen.
Mm-hmm.
And how do they kind of come together with Christianity?
Yeah, I think they have many things in common. You can compare it with the mystical people in the Middle Ages.
Mm-hmm.
But to find Christ in yourself, inside yourself, and to go on this big research during the meditation, if you find yourself, you will find God.
Some people may find it, oh gosh, it's so Eastern, and the East spirituality is very Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
It can contradict with, you know, Western spirituality.
It works very well together.
Maybe you might want to explain how.
Yeah, as I told you before, the mystical thoughts of the mystical people in the Middle Ages, they said just the same thing as Buddha said.
Mm-hmm.
Find yourself,
and
you will find God inside yourself.
Okay, being able to find God with inside and having a sense of a peacefulness. You know, one of the things that people don't realize, and you know, Buddha never considered himself a deity.
No.
Some people may approach him as a deity.
But not himself. No.
But not himself. Yeah, and strangely, that would be the exact opposite, because many people had approached Jesus not as a deity, but he knew who he was. And so now, you come from a very traditional background, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I went to church with you, there, everyone sat in like almost perfect rows.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't move.
Okay, that's very German.
It's very German, that's right, and timing was somewhat impeccable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my master, who educated me in this Zen thing, he's a Palatine priest, and he said it's very important to have your roots, and my roots are in my own hometown, in that parish, in the Catholicism my parish has.
Mm-hmm.
These are my roots, and of course these roots given to me lots of identity. When you have this base, you can develop and explore your spirituality.
Yes. And your spirituality, how is it affected by your experience being a German in the modern world?
That has nothing to do with a German, being German.
Nothing to do with it.
No.
But you find passion in certain things, though.
Mm.
Like, you know, in our conversations, for example, in the car ride over here, You became passionate about making sure that we never go back to...
Oh, that's right. This is part of my understanding being a German.
Yeah.
To have that responsibility the Germans have after what happened in the Second World War.
Yes.
That these kind of things, that these things will never happen again.
Yeah, and so obviously it requires, you've used the word, almost a project for peace building.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say would be some of the things that you do personally to kind of promote that peace?
I try to do in every act I do every day.
Such
being
as?
Being gentle to the people, open a door for a lady or a child or whatever.
Uh-huh.
All the little things.
Are there things that just kind of drive you crazy? Like, what pushes...
Nationalism drives me crazy.
So nationalism?
Right thinking, right ideology, that drives me crazy.
When you say right, you're talking about political?
Political right.
Okay, conservatism. Extreme,
no. Oh, no. I am very conservative.
Okay.
In some ways. That has something to do with the German history as well.
Uh-huh.
That the new nationalism, and that drives me crazy.
Neo-Nazi,
racism, okay. all these kind of things.
Do you encounter that regularly?
Yeah.
Really?
Of course. Yeah.
Like, where do you encounter? Because in
everywhere.
In your city, it's so
everywhere.
Peaceful, it seems.
Some way of thinking of the people,
uh-huh.
It's just the opposite.
Ah.
So, and that's, that scares me a lot.
It scares you a lot. Okay. No, and that's certainly understandable, you know, trying to get the perspective of someone who's... You didn't experience any of that in the past. You weren't part of any of that.
No.
So how do you find yourself defensive or sensitive to that kind of labeling?
Yeah, I'm very attentive to phrases or what people are saying.
Ah.
And then I say, no, maybe you should think about that, what you were saying before.
Uh-huh.
Something like that.
Wow. In your temperament, your personality, kind of your upbringing, if there was actually... Now, this is a very perhaps perplexing question.
Mm-hmm.
But if there was a situation that would require you to take a side and to fight, quote-unquote, would you do it as a... As a man who's peaceful, like practicing...
No, I won't fight.
You won't fight?
No.
Okay, so you would be, in a way, a conscientious objector to it all.
And I think from time to time it's useless to argue, and even to argue in fighting.
Yeah.
So you can't correct.
No.
Maybe there's no chance to correct the people, though. But it's important to say the other way of thinking that is possible as well.
The other way of thinking meaning the way of peace.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, being here in a bigger city and you're seeing a lot of internationality, you know, several different languages and such that are around here, and you come from a pretty, you know, smallish town. How do you like the big city, or do you prefer...
I like the big city. I've lived for 13 years in a very big city, I'm very... cosmopolitan as well, so I have no problem with that. And it's the other, I think all the different nationalities, you can learn about from them, and you can communicate with them, so it's good. It's a good thing.
Now, with the experience of growing up and having this cosmopolitan kind of experience, and then of course you spending a lot of time in America. If you could say, like, some of the things that you like about America or don't like about America, or maybe compare, because I'm constantly comparing, not in a, like, who's better or who's worse, but how do these stack up to my experiences? Like, are there some things that just stick out in your mind that are like, that's so American?
I don't have the word in English. I'm sorry.
You don't have the word in English?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, if you were to say...
Maybe some Americans, they miss a little bit deeper thinking.
Deeper thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, that came up the last time.
Reflection.
Reflection.
Yeah.
How much time do you spend reflecting? Tell me, what does that look like for you?
Reading several newspapers, documentaries, talk with other people.
You don't have a TV in your home, right?
No, I have a radio.
Yeah, because you made a conscious decision not to to get into all of that.
Yeah.
Yep. And how about your other reflection, almost spiritual meditative reflection?
Mm.
Can you share with our listeners what your type of spiritual internal reflection looks like? What do you do?
Sitting, breathing, that's all.
Sitting and breathing, like...
As I told you, the three basics of Zen meditation is raise your body, take
the... you told me, you didn't tell the people listening though. So
I repeat it. Raise your body, take the breath, and let the thoughts go.
And let your thoughts go.
Yeah, free your mind.
Free your mind. There was a song in the 90s about that.
I know.
Do you play that before you start meditating?
Maybe after that.
Maybe. Now, the cultures, Western cultures, obviously, with the American influences, what would be some of the things that you have appreciated from the American influences and, like, don't appreciate? I mean, you like ZZ Top.
I like the music very much.
Okay. But not all the music.
Not all the music, of course. I like the, some kind of the culture. Yeah.
Do you like American food?
I like the food as well.
Yeah. What would be kind of your favorite food in America?
What I do most of the time when I come back to New York is the first evening I go to a burger restaurant to take a very nice hamburger.
Wait a minute. But Hamburg, that's a city in Germany, isn't it?
It is. I don't know the history of the word, so I don't know.
Well, when you come back to America and you usually spend your time in New York City, is there a place in New York City that you just really enjoy?
Might be the Central Park.
Okay, so Midtown, Manhattan.
Midtown, Manhattan.
Well, in Germany, because I know a lot of people, again, they notice Germany and they think of the hillsides rolling Bavaria. They'll think of that. How would you describe the different regions of Germany? Like, from the north, that's near the ocean, right?
Of course.
And so
they're more cosmopolitan.
More cosmopolitan.
Especially in Hamburg.
Okay.
Because it's the door to the world, or used to be as well.
And the south is more pastoral or?
More pastoral, yes.
How about
traditional.
And then in the middle part of the country?
It depends, the region.
In the region. So every region is very, very different?
Unique and different.
Languages are different?
The dialects, accents are very different as well.
And then is there a place that you like to go to when you are traveling about in Germany?
In Germany? Well, I like the nice little towns and cities in Baden-Württemberg. This is the southwest.
The southwest?
Yeah, and I extremely appreciate the local kitchen.
The local kitchen?
Right.
That just basically means?
Because every region has its own specialties, food and food producers, so that I appreciate most when I'm on a trip through Germany.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, the little tour that we had from Dusseldorf to Cologne to Attendorn and now here in Frankfurt has been amazing. Very eye-opening, very different. You know, my stereotypes are, some of them are very much in place, and then some of them are very surprisingly different, especially the whole carnival thing.
You see, you have to come.
Crazy.
It is the 8th through the 14th of February.
8th through the 14th of February, and that's obviously before Lent.
Exactly, it's the 5 days before Lent.
Yes, 5 days before Lent. So that basically means, folks, if you are not in the New Orleans area and you find yourself in Europe and you're missing a little carnival action, you've got to come to Germany, at least in the Cologne area, where you can experience carnival the way they do. And make sure, folks, if you are in Cologne, that you drink Kölsch.
Right,
you and have if you to. Are in Dusseldorf, ask for the Alt beer.
Right.
And how about here in Frankfurt? What would be the beer that we ask for?
This is less a beer than a kind of cider.
Kind of cider. So tell me about that. Is it like apple cider?
It's apple cider.
All right.
Applevoy.
Okay. Listen, this has just been what I would call a very pleasant experience. Very eye-opening. There have been some surprises, certainly. And also some things that I still need to learn a lot about. Tons of things that I need to learn a lot more of this very unique country. At one point, many different kingdoms, now different states, but now one unified part of the European Union and obviously a leader in so many ways, especially if you want to have a good fart.
Of course.
And good fart means?
Good trip.
Happy traveling. So I hope you all have a good fart. As we come back, I'll be back with my carryout order here on Shoot the Shiitake with Father Leo.
Thank you.
People always ask, where can I watch your TV show, Father Leo? Well, let me explain. You can always watch everything online at fatherleofeeds.com/watch, or you can watch my TV show, Savoring Our Faith, on EWTN.com, and I'm on every Fridays at 6:30 p.m. So check out the local listings, EWTN.com/savoringourfaith, and bon appetit for your soul.
We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, for this carry out order. And I hope you enjoyed this conversation. I'll be very honest with you. I wish I had my recorder on the entire time, because you'll actually hear how measured and collected Sebastian is, which is what I really appreciate about him. He's very calm and collected, not just because he's very German, and there is a sense of stoicism in Germans, you know, generally in Europeans, but also because I believe his Zen practices in Buddhism helps him. And I know a lot of people get very nervous when a Catholic gets involved in other spiritual practices like Buddhism and Zen ish practices of meditation. And I'll just tell you, I'm not afraid of that kind of stuff, because it really is not the method of prayer or meditation that can hurt you. It's the object to whom you are praying and meditating upon. See, one of the big struggles about Zen and Buddhism is that it sometimes leads to only a reflection of self. And therefore, if you remove Christ, Jesus, from meditation, then guess what? That's when you get into a lot of trouble. So one of the reasons why I'm not afraid to talk about Zen and Buddhism with Sebastian Springup is because I know at the center of his meditation is Jesus Christ. You know, he's in formation with the Voluntas Dei Institute. You know, he definitely loves his Catholic faith. I love the fact that he said that he's both conservative and liberal at the same time, which is kind of like a good way to be. And it's not that you have a divided heart. It's just that he's not going to try to take sides and take a camp. You know, and that's a real unique tension that I felt when I was visiting with him. First of all, I loved my time. His hospitality was absolutely beautiful, and I'm so grateful to God that he's my friend and also a brother Voluntas Dei member. And it was great to hear his perspective of the European Union and just his fight against nationalism. And I can truly appreciate his disdain for anyone who is so nationalistic that they don't consider themselves part of a global world. You know, and as much as I love seeing globalism kind of take root, that we see ourselves as one big happy family, we also have to admit that, you know, people are different in the world, which is why he kind of demonstrated his passion for his local town Mardi Gras, which is kind of another stereotype that he broke for me. I just would never have known that Mardi Gras is a big deal for Germans. I knew that they were a big deal for, you know, New Orleanians, but Germans? Seriously? I mean, I thought of it as Oktoberfest, you know, and that's just kind of like a beer drinking time for the entire month. But no, it really is more about, for that part of Germany, their Mardi Gras, which is a religious celebration. It's the, you know, the weeks before Lent begins. And he was very proud of the identity that he has as a German and as a nationalist and as part of that town. So he appreciates the individual culture that he grew up in, yet he also sees himself as part of a global community. And that is tension. That creates great tension. And, you know, as a Catholic priest, one of the things that I learned from this conversation is that I have to be not only parochially minded, I've got to take care of the people entrusted to me through my ministries, through the talks where I'm presenting, even like for the pilgrims that I'm taking care of. But I have to also see myself as part of a bigger picture and also part of a bigger world. And it really does create a dynamic tension. And so what can help with all of that? Well, he said something that I've not heard as sincerely said by anybody else when talking about the EU, the European Union, or even, you know, the United Nations efforts. He said that he holds himself dear to the idea of the vision of peace, the idea or concept that relates to the meaning of things. You know, the European Union and even the United Nations, they're symbols of a desire for unity. And he holds on to that. And so for that reason, I can 100% support him. However, I also, on the other hand, you know, because every side of a story has another side of a story, I also believe that it's important for every individual country to be able to hold on to their identity and to make sure that one doesn't take over the other. And so for as much as the United States is a major player, not just in terms of the number of people and the size of our country, but even just the finances that we contribute to, say, for example, the United Nations, I mean, we pay the most to support the United Nations. And that's just an economical fact. But it's almost like our influence might be too great, which is why when we kind of just focus on America, it frustrates everybody because then they think, oh my gosh, America is being selfish and exclusive. So it's a real difficult balance for political leaders and heads of nations to see themselves as, one, taking care of their own people, which they got to do, and two, seeing their responsibility in the global world. That is a great tension, which is why the one thing that I can say is that his spiritual practice of Zen Buddhism and practicing quote-unquote mindfulness might be helpful. I'm sure it's not the only way that you can kind of deal with all of the crazy tensions in the world. But being a Zen Buddhist, his desire is to be better at meditation. And let me tell you, don't freak out, everybody. St. John Paul II said meditation, reflection, and contemplation are the weapons against the assault of the evil one who doesn't want us to meditate and see how we are connected to a bigger picture and to a global world. And so this conversation with Sebastian Springup was not only enlightening to me, but helpful to just have a perspective that is slightly different from my own, but also one that lent me to a little bit more respect for what he's going through. He is a millennial, well, he's a little older than a millennial age, but, you know, he's youngish and he's a great guy. And he came from a country that did atrocious things to Jewish people and beyond, and concentration camps and Nazi Germany. And it's just horrible what his country went through, their history, which is why he fights so vigorously to avoid a nationalism. But at the same time, he needs to be proud of the things that made Germany great, like his Mardi Gras. So this idea of the balance between national pride, which we're entitled to have, and we really are entitled to have it, but balanced with our global responsibility, boy, it really points more to the tension than anything else. And you know, that tension is so obvious when we were either in one part of Germany over the other, you would have to drink this type of beer over that type of beer. That kind of like local national or local pride is kind of what makes us unique. And as long as our pride doesn't become sinful, that it's just literally being proud of who we are and making sure that we represent the best version of that region, that city, that state, or that nationality, or that cultural or religious affiliation, then heck, be proud of that. But let's make sure that that proud quality of who we are doesn't obfuscate the areas that really we need to work on. And those areas that we need to work on is to make sure that we see ourselves as servants to one another, including our global community. So for all of the conversation that we had with Sebastian Springup, I'm so grateful for this conversation. I'm grateful for you for being a part of this conversation. And if it leads to more questions, please ask me. Make sure that you reach out to me at fatherleofeeds.com. That's Father Leo spelled out at fatherleofeeds.com. Please send to me your questions. Please send to me the kind of topics and people you want me to interview. And please, if you are enjoying these shows, I beg you, please support us because we need it. We need your support. With just $10 or more each month, you'll get premium content, which is an extra show each week. And more importantly, it'll just give us a chance to maybe one day celebrate all together. Wouldn't that be awesome if we got all our Shoot Shiitake members and we just got together for, I don't know, like a conference or a dinner somewhere? That would be totally awesome in my opinion. So again, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. And between now and the next time we shoot the shiitake, stay hungry. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, and this episode is brought to you by Select International Travel, where they have the compassion for the pilgrim, but they have passion for pilgrimages, and you can learn all about their trips, including the 4 with me that I'm going to be leading in 2019. Just go to selectinternationaltours.com or visit me at fatherleofeeds.com/travel. And as always, we thank you for listening. Please We encourage you to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform, to share this podcast with family, friends, and parishioners, and also, if it's in your heart, support us with a premium subscription of $10 or more each month, and you can do that at fatherleofeeds.com/listen or shootthesheetake.com.
Redbox Media. Find more about us at redboxmedia.com.